and AmericansForTheArts.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Well, coming up, we're going to discuss the ongoing problems of State Senator Jack Latvell, who has been accused of sexual harassment in Tallahassee. He's from Clearwater, but spends a lot of time in Tallahassee. We're going to talk about that. And also the governor's new budget proposal and the tax proposal making its way through Congress. We're going to hear about all these topics on Florida this week. And as you hear the discussion, you can email us your thoughts on the topics. DJ@WMNF.org is our address. Coming up later, we're going to talk about President Trump and look back at the women who accused him of sexual harassment. That's coming up in the second part of the program. But first, here's Florida This Week, which is a panel discussion that appears on WEDU, the PBS station in Tampa, every Friday night at 8:30. Coming up next, the governor reveals his proposed state budget that includes more money for education, but wants that additional money to come from local property taxes. The pressure increases on State Senator Jack Latvell over the sex scandal. Some Hillsborough teachers are angry that there won't be any incentive raises, and how will the tax plan in Congress affect Floridians? Political insights next on Florida This Week.
WEDU Studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lori.
Welcome back. This week our panelists are Katie Sanders is a deputy editor for PolitiFact. Brendan McLaughlin is an independent journalist. Mark Proctor is a political consultant and a Republican. And Vic DiMaio is a political consultant and a Democrat. Thank you for coming. Great to see you. Well, Governor Rick Scott wants the legislature to pass a record-high state budget of $87.4 billion next year. It's by far the largest budget Scott has proposed since the Republican governor took office 7 years ago. And it's a far cry from his initial budget that tried to slash education spending by 10%. Scott's proposal has a little something for everyone. $220 million for environmental programs, $53 million to combat the opioid epidemic, $4,000 pay raises for starting state troopers, cuts in driver's license fees, $50 million more for improvements to state parks, almost $11 billion for roads and infrastructure, and a $200 per pupil increase in education. The catch is that education money would come from increased local property tax revenue. If Scott has his way, more prison staff would be hired, but most state workers would not get raises. State college and university tuition would stay frozen at the current levels. Critics dismissed it as a blueprint designed to sound good to voters and to secure Scott's political future as he sets his sights on a U.S. Senate race next year. The Florida Democratic Party said Scott's self-serving budget cannot compensate for shortchanging education, the environment, health care, and law enforcement in his first 7 years. The Democrats claim Scott's tenure has left hardworking Floridians worse off than when he took office.
All right, Victor, there is a lot in the budget. Is it a good one? What do you think?
No, because there's a lot, because for 7.5 years that he's been governor, we've had a tremendous lack of funding in areas. For example, the amendment that passed saying we have to spend money for environmental stuff. For years, they spent zero. There's a housing crisis going on in my neighborhood in West Tampa, for example. There's developers buying up lots and building $400,000 homes. And the Sadowski Fund that was set up years ago under Governor Graham, who I used to work for, was supposed to take monies from the doc stamps and put it in a fund statewide where that money could then be used for affordable housing, for first-time home buyers and so forth. And they've been raping that fund for the last 10 years, for example. They've taken about $1.2 billion out of that money. It should have gone to help people that need good housing. And frankly, a school teacher making $38,000 a year, or a policeman or fireman, they cannot afford to spend money on a $400,000 home. So we are reaching a crisis in Tampa and in a lot of areas of the Bay Area that doesn't have affordable housing that people need to live in.
Mark, good budget or a bad budget?
Well, I think it's a good budget. And if you go back in when he took office in 2011, we're in the midst of a recession. We had a lot of budget shortfalls. He cut back. Since he's been in office, he's saved taxpayers of the state of Florida $7.5 billion in taxes. They cut back. They trimmed the budget. Now they've increased. This year's budget is $4 billion more than last year's budget. They put increases into education, the environment, transportation, a lot of the important things, and a $5 million surplus, which is important because we just had the hurricanes and those things. So I think from an overall perspective, it's good. It may not be everything for everybody, but certainly is improvement.
Mark, part of this is that the governor is counting on local property values to go up, and
yes,
that's where the increased money for education is going to come from. So it's not coming from the state budget. Should he be spending more money out of the state conference for education?
Two things. One is the state, because of the job creation and the things that he had promised to do, the state revenues are increasing. Even though taxes are reduced, the increase by the economic growth, and at the local level, housing values are going up, ad valorem tax rates are going up, and he's counting on that to help supplement particularly the education budget at the local level.
But the problem we're going to have is that on the ballot next year is going to be the proposal to double everyone's homestead exemption. That's going to dramatically reduce the income that the state and local governments are going to have. I mean, Hillsborough County is going to lose about $40 million. City of Tampa is talking anywhere from $5 to $10 million is going to take a hit on their budget. So all the things that we've been accustomed to having, they're going to be slashed. And I was at a luncheon several months back with Senator LaValle, says, you know, the problem with us Republicans over having total control 20 years, we've never met a tax break we didn't like. So they're getting to the point where there's no money to pay for the stuff we do need to do.
Katie, that's what I'm wondering. In the out years, in the coming years, what are the revenue projections for the state of Florida? Mark mentioned the governor's tax breaks. The governor proudly says 75 tax breaks over the last 7 years that he's given to businesses and to individuals. I think the expectation is you're going to reap a bounty from that. That's the Republican philosophy, that by cutting taxes, you actually get more money into the system. Is that turning out to be true?
So there's two things I would say about that. Number one, the 75 tax reductions or eliminations that Scott has touted, he's touted iterations of that talking point for years, and it's so much more squishy than just 75 flat tax cuts. A lot of it's very narrowly targeted to fee reductions, or he counts every year's back to school sales tax holiday as a tax cut, and so that's debatable. But going further, the state economist Amy Baker, she's a nonpartisan analyst, she said Floridians have a lot to worry about actually in the coming years. We have a structural imbalance in the way that the state pays for vital programs. So they might not do it this year, but down the line, they're going to have to really look at where the income to do those things that they're doing now, not doing extra, but that to sustain what they're doing now.
Brenda, the governor has not been known for embracing the cause of environmentalism, but in this year's budget, he set aside some extra money for the environment.
Yeah, I mean, I think to Victor's point, this year's budget doesn't make up for the last 7 years in which education and the environment took a hit, certainly. But taken by itself, just because you do a good thing, maybe for not the best reason, you still did a good thing. I mean, they call this securing Florida's future. That's what he calls the budget. It's been said that he's securing his political future running for Senate down the road here. But it also sort of it makes you wonder what happened to the small government conservative that Rick Scott campaigned as. This is how does he go out and tout the largest budget in Florida ever?
And one of the biggest battles is education. I mean, education and healthcare take up the biggest chunk of the budget. And starting under Jeb Bush, when we started the entire voucher program, we have the largest voucher programs in the United States right now. The private for-profit charter schools saw a $200 million taxpayer-funded Christmas present this year to fund private schools, and you have Hillsborough County school system that has air conditioners that don't work, and on top of that, which we'll talk about later, the teachers are upset because they're not getting their promise monies that they had promised them. So
Mark,
it's a mess.
We are going to talk about teachers, especially in Hillsborough County, in just a second. I want to ask you, part of getting a budget passed is what's your relationship with the leadership in the House and Senate?
Absolutely.
And how is the governor's relationship now with the changes with Jack LaValle as being taken
actually,
out of the
budget?
That's
a very good point, because in previous sessions, he's had a very difficult time. Like Speaker Corcoran was going after some of his, like, Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida those were targeted. And now there seems to be a little bit more of a amicable relationship. Now, perhaps, and again, I'm just speculating, perhaps that's because Corcoran's going to run for this office and Scott's going to run for this office. I don't know. But it certainly seems to be a lot more mellow. I don't know that Latvala was necessarily the cause of it, but clearly it's a lot more cordial now.
Well, because they play games with the trust funds, you know, like the Sadowski Fund I mentioned, and Sean Shaw from Tampa has introduced a bill with a Republican senator from South Florida to stop this raiding of the trust funds.
And I agree with that.
They play shell games all the time. We had a Tiger Bay that I'm president of had a program on it last week.
But the governor says that money's just sitting there. Why not use it in troubled times? That's the governor's argument is, you know, this money is just sitting there. It is rainy day funds, so when you get into a jam, these agencies can reach in and do it. But are you saying that we haven't done a good job, for instance,
on affordable housing
exactly. over the last 7 years?
Billion dollars have gone out to pay for Mickey Mouse little, you know, to fund this guy's pet project. And, I can take care of you because I got this project over here. I got this money that's supposed to go for poor people needing a house. But they won't miss it because we're going to give them $100 million, although they're supposed to get $300
million. All right, so raiding trust funds, not always a good idea.
And no, I completely agree with Victor. I mean, a lot of these programs we support because they're dedicated funds, and then you find out later they're spending other things. I completely agree.
Right.
Well, Politico Florida is reporting the woman who filed a sexual harassment complaint with the Florida Senate against Clearwater State Senator Jack Latvala is an employee of the Senate.
The woman's attorney has not disclosed her client's identity, nor would she confirm whether her client was one of the six women who work in the Florida Capitol and anonymously made the original allegations in a November 3rd Politico article that said the Republican lawmaker had sexually harassed them by groping and making demeaning comments about their bodies. Meantime, the state legislature is hiring a national employment law firm to investigate Senator Latvala. In an interview with the News Service of Florida, Latvala maintained that he's never groped the unidentified women, and he accused his political enemies of masterminding the allegations.
So, Brendan, I keep waiting for more allegations against other people in Tallahassee. So far, that hasn't happened, but...
There's a sense that people are waiting for the other shoe to drop. They say that power is the ultimate aphrodisiac, I guess, and, you know, so you might expect some acting out in the halls of power from people who either are powerful or think they are. But in Jack Latvala's case, I mean, you've got a situation where the Senate is considering, you know, really... going after him for sexual harassment. At this stage of the game, the accusers have not been identified. They're anonymous at this point, which at this stage is probably appropriate. And it should be noted that Jack Latvala himself supported a bill that would carve out an exemption of the open records law that would protect the identities of people who are accusing people of sexual harassment.
He himself did this.
Yeah.
Katie, some male columnists this week have said these women should come forward. It's hard for women to come forward if they're employees of the chamber.
Certainly, there's a big personal risk these women would take if they did come forward. It would lend more credibility or, you know, like in the case of Roy Moore, these people are on the record. They've showed up to press conferences. But I think that you might see more people come forward as the case goes on. You know, you had Pam Bondi, I think it was last week or this week, saying that they have the right to face their accuser, right? But it's difficult because in Tallahassee, access is key, and the relations are very personal between lobbyists and legislators and other people in the process. So these women are not going on the record because they don't want to jeopardize their reputations.
Or their careers.
Exactly.
You know, their livelihood. So, Victor, is the Senate, by getting this national employment law firm who specializes in these kind of cases to do the investigation, is that putting more pressure on Latvala, or is that simply what it ought to do? To get to the bottom of these allegations.
Well, I find the whole thing ironic. I mean, the person they've hired, I believe, is a Tampa attorney who's very well experienced in the field. But I think it's so ironic in this day and age with everything going on, there's not really a set procedure for, a woman to make a complaint about sexual harassment or even on the other side of the fence. So I find this ironic that they're scrambling now to try to put some procedure in place and then hire some attorney to do the investigation. This all should have been done ahead of time, really. The sad thing is, you know, for 60 days, Tallahassee is where it's at for a reason. It's away from the big centers. It's a long way to travel. You know, unfortunately, the media has cut down quite a bit on coverage and their bureaus. So, and like Brendan said, it's a power game that goes on between the lobbyists who tell the legislators how wonderful they are and the staff who tell the legislators how wonderful they are. And, you know, a lot of times, sadly, it just goes to their head. Mm-hmm. And they don't make a lot of money. They make about $29,000 a year for this part-time job. So it kind of feeds upon itself, to be honest with you. And it's sad, but it's a fact of what goes on in Tallahassee.
Based on what we know now, is Latvala long for the office, or do you think he's going to hang in there?
I don't know. That's a very tough question. I think Latvala's a tough guy, and he'll stick it out as long as he can. But like you see what's going on with Roy Moore in Alabama, it's a waiting game at this point.
Okay. Well, hundreds of Hillsborough County teachers held a spirited protest at the school board headquarters this week, demanding an incentive pay raise that they say was promised by the district.
One-third of Hillsborough County teachers expected their raises this year, but they've not seen a cent. The school district says it cannot afford the $17 million it would take to pay out those performance raises to teachers and support staff.
So, Mark, there was a big protest. Teachers, their families, students showed up this week in front of the school board. People were inside the meeting and outside the meeting, very spirited. They feel very strongly about this. You talked to some school board officials this week?
Yeah, and I think this is a very important issue. We've made promises. The administration made promises 3 years ago to these teachers that if you do this and you do this, then you'll receive the pay. It's an incentive pay.
This was under the old superintendent, Mary Ellen Elia.
But at some point, they should have, in my opinion, faced up to the fact that, okay, we're not going to live up to the promises made. So when they did their budget now, they're $17 million short. That's the shortfall in terms of being able to pay out those raises. The total budget is $3 billion, but what I was told by the school board people, that $3 billion is the current budget, but there's another $3 billion in shortfall. $1 billion due to the fact that because of a reduced size class amendment, they had to expand. They took all of their reserves and spent that down to build. Number two, they've got the older schools, maintenance issues. They're $1 billion down there. And number three, they've got a huge population increase in South County. They got another $1 billion there. So in addition to the current budget, they're $3 billion behind just to meet what they anticipate are the current needs. Having said that, I think they need to find the $17 million and live up to the promises they made to the teachers.
It's a very complicated issue. You know, we were all excited when the Gates grant came around and said, oh, we're going to get $100 million, and it turns out they only got $80 million. So they all got geared up. They got extra money. The Hillsborough got an exemption from the state to do the program, and then they didn't plan for the end of the $100 million. So now they're in a pickle. And there's a lot of hanky-panky that went on with Mary Ellen Elia that they found out later after she left that she was hiding money in different places and not reporting things properly to the board. And now they're inheriting that as well. But the other issue we have, the biggest battle we have right now is, again, I mentioned again, the private for-profit charter schools. There's four brand new high schools going up in the Northwest County area, for example. They're taking thousands of students away from the public school system. And this is what drives the public school teachers nuts, is because these private for charter schools, they don't have to, the benefits, they don't have to pay benefits because that's part of the deal. They don't have any retirement. They barely have insurance. They don't have the same standards. And they don't even have to take the same tests that the public school systems, the teachers and the kids have to do that the private charter schools are getting, and yet they're taking $200 million out of public funds to pay for these private for-profit charter schools, and they don't have to meet any of the standards. And that's another reason that the school teachers, the public school teachers who devote their lives to teach these kids, are very upset about.
Would you say $200 million, you're talking statewide?
Statewide, but still.
It's still a lot of money.
We're the third largest system.
Brendan, the teachers are complaining that too many people in downtown Tampa at the school board offices, there's too many administrators paid more than $100,000. $100,000 a year. Is that a fair criticism?
Sure, from their point of view, it's a perfectly fair criticism. And I think what's happening now is, if this were a temporary sort of shortfall, this, the inability to pay these bonuses, you'd expect a negotiation to work it out. But I think union members and teachers and administrators and even people in Tallahassee are starting to understand that this is structural, that perhaps public schools are going to be in a perpetual state of financial shortage going forward for a lot of different reasons. But I think if you get back to the basics, which is this is about educating our children, that whether we have private schools and charter schools in addition to public schools, all teachers should be paid well. They should be paid competitively, because that's what's best, I think, for the kids.
You know, what Brendan said, Katie, is so true. There's a structural issue, and that is you've got new people moving to Florida. 1,000 new people move to Florida every day. We've got an influx of people from Puerto Rico who are escaping from the destruction on the island. And we know that other school districts are having trouble with teacher negotiations, with salary negotiations. Polk County has a big problem when it comes to their capital plan. Their school buildings are having some of the same problems that Hillsborough County school buildings are having. And this goes across the state. It's not just a Hillsborough issue.
It's not. And it really speaks to this picture that Governor Rick Scott and other leaders paint of Florida as being so in the clear from where we were with the Great Recession. The fact is, a lot of communities, not just big ones like Hillsborough, but rural communities remain farther behind from before the recession even hit. I'm not saying Hillsborough is in that picture, but certainly there need to be a lot of tough choices to be made to get new revenues into schools and other programs. So they have to really take on those challenges head on.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that Hillsborough County is looking at is that they used to have the authority to assign a 2 mil. The millage rate was 0.2 or 2, and now it's been reduced, or it has been reduced, to 1.5. And one of the things they're going to push for is to be allowed to increase the millage. Now, that in some cases will be unpopular because it's more taxes, but it does give them the authority to raise more money. Some of the other issues that are being discussed are maybe leasing the buildings rather than going out and purchasing land and building a building. So there are some solutions.
Okay. Well, President Trump is looking for at least one legislative accomplishment this year, and he's pinning his hopes on the Republican tax plan, which he wants passed before Christmas. Details are still being worked out in private. There have been no public hearings on the tax bill so far.
What we do know is that while Wall Street continues its almost 9-year bull run, the GOP wants to cut the corporate tax rate from 35 to 20%. They also want to eliminate the estate tax, which only applies to estates over $5.5 million for a single person and $11 million for a married couple. The number of tax brackets would fall from 7 to 5, and the new standard deduction would jump to $12,000 from $6,350 for single taxpayers, with a rise to $24,000 from $12,700 for married couples filing jointly. And this week, a provision to eliminate the Affordable Care Act's individual insurance mandate was proposed for the Senate version. Florida's congressional delegation so far is split along party lines, with Republicans supporting the measure and Democrats opposed. The tax bill will be easy to pass in the House, but if President Trump is to be successful, there's not much room for error in the U.S. Senate, where Republicans only hold a slim majority.
Katie, we only have about a minute left, but PolitiFact has fact-checked some of this. Will the typical family save $1,200? And will every American get a tax break? And is Dick Durbin right from Illinois, the Democrat, that the CBO hasn't rated this tax plan?
Okay, I'll try to take those in order. So with the first one, a Paul Ryan talking point, he said a family of four making the median household income would get almost $1,200 a year. Where he really went too far is promising that family under those very specific circumstances would get that tax break every year, like it would keep coming. An analysis showed that they would actually end up 10 years out owing more money. So the tax break would get smaller and smaller. It's just oversimplified to describe it in that way.
Okay.
Okay, number two, does every American get a tax break? This is another example of where the language has just gotten a little too far. We rated this claim false. Not every American is guaranteed a tax break in this claim. Each income group that has been kind of broken out in the bill would get a tax break, but there are some Americans, about 8%, that because of their circumstances, they would not be able to take advantage of what's in the bill, and that's about 8 million people. That's millions of Americans, mm-hmm. 8% of Americans.
And Dick Durbin, has the CBO scored this?
Yeah, Dick Durbin was going really hard on the morning shows last week, saying that the Senate's trying to do this in secret. It hasn't been analyzed by the CBO. The CBO is a nonpartisan kind of in-house research agency that does a lot of healthcare analysis, but it's not really the CBO's job to even do this kind of tax legislation. That's another nonpartisan group called the Joint Committee on Taxation that has, in fact, looked at several aspects of the bill. So he got a false for that one.
All right, so everybody should look it up on PolitiFact. All right, before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention to? Brendan, let's start with you.
The Tampa Hillsborough Expressway Authority has received a grant along with just a handful of other cities to explore and experiment with connected vehicle technology. And this is basically allows cars to talk to each other and talk to stop signs and things like that. It also involves some autonomous driverless cars. So Tampa might be able to change its motto to either Tampa leading the way in technology or Tampa run for your life.
Victor, your other big story.
David A. Strass Jr., who's considering running for mayor, is going to have an old-fashioned West Tampa spaghetti dinner, which is unusual for somebody who's just thinking of running for mayor. If you don't want to cook, come to Sunday, December 3rd, to the Sons of Italy Hall in West Tampa, and it's all-you-can-eat spaghetti. So, you know, I guess you can enjoy
what,
that day.
What time?
It's from 12 noon to 2 p.m.
All right,
we're
going
to have live music, too.
Mark, your other big story.
This Wednesday, the Hillsborough County Board of County Commissioners passed the Truth in Training Bill. We're the only county in the country now that requires a license, a training manual, a $100,000 insurance policy to train dogs. The irony of the meeting was one of the people there to speak against the ordinance, their child was bitten by a dog, and that became one of the topics of discussion.
All right. And Katie, your other big story.
Okay, I'm going to put on my Tampa Bay Times hat real fast. This Sunday, the Times is rerunning its most popular story, The Girl in the Window. And next month, a follow-up, a 10 years later follow-up, is running in the paper, too. So get excited for that read.
All right, that's a fantastic story. Well, thank you all for a great show. Thanks for watching Florida This Week.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on WEDU-TV. And my guests on that panel included Katie Sanders, who writes for PolitiFact. And also there was Brendan McLaughlin, who is a freelance journalist now. And we also heard there from Vic DiMaio, who's a Democrat, and Mark Proctor was the Republican on that panel. And I ask people to comment. You can comment about anything you've heard here the last 25 minutes. You can comment by writing to dj@wmnf.org, or you can call us up at 813-239-9663. Before we sat down to record that show, we recorded it early because Channel 3 was doing some major construction last week. So we missed this story, which happened on Friday, and that is that Florida Democratic Party chairperson Stephen Battell abruptly resigned on Friday, just hours after a news report accused him of creating an uncomfortable work environment by leering at women and making suggestive remarks. And I'm reading here from the News Service of Florida. A longtime Tallahassee reporter, Derek Cam, wrote this. She writes, the hurried exit of Battell, a veteran fundraiser chosen to head the state party in January after a fractious leadership contest, comes as Democrats were reveling over two recent hard-fought victories and gearing up for critical elections, including an open governor's race next year. In the Politico Florida report, six unidentified women said Battell never physically touched or threatened them, but they alleged he made aides and consultants feel so ill at ease that they did not want to be with the party boss, alone with the party boss. Battell said in a statement, when my personal situation becomes distracting to our core mission of electing Democrats and making Florida better, it is time for me to step aside. He went on to say, I am proud of what we have built as a party and the wins we have had for Florida families, but I apologize for all who have felt uncomfortable during my tenure at the Democratic Party. Battell says he's working with party leaders to set a date for an election to choose his successor. For now, He will be replaced by party vice chair Judy Mount. She's a worker in the State House of Representatives Minority Office who wants the permanent post. Battelle's boorish behavior was hardly a secret in Democratic circles, but it was impossible for him to remain the chairman after all four Democratic gubernatorial candidates Friday morning demanded that he step down. That's just part of an article about the resignation of Florida's Democratic Party Chairman Stephen Battelle last Friday, which we were not able to include on the TV show, but it's an important story to know. David sent in this comment while we were listening to Florida This Week. He said, "It bugs me that the state media sources no longer take a critical eye toward Governor Rick Scott. I liked how the Tampa Bay Times was very critical of Scott when he first started as governor, but it seems like the Times has really taken a step back on its criticism. What's the deal? I still think that Scott is a corporate crook, and I think he'd do a terrible job of representing Floridians as a U.S. senator. I also worry that Scott's ultimate goal is president. Ugh. And some smart folks need to come up with a Sink Scott movement to end his political career." Those are David's comments. He's one of our listeners. He sent that in. And you can send in your comments. Everybody's welcome. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I should say that there is a story that's critical of Governor Rick Scott in today's newspaper, in today's Tampa Bay Times, the newspaper that David was just criticizing. And I'll just read three or four of the paragraphs. It's written by Steve Bosquet, who's sometimes guest here on WMNF and also on the TV show Florida This Week. Steve writes, "Governor Rick Scott's tourism chiefs at Visit Florida spent a lot of public money taking trips to exotic places to promote Florida as a top worldwide destination. Four former top-level staff members at the state's tourism promotion and its current top executive spent a combined $150,000 on travel in the past 14 months at a time when Visit Florida was under scrutiny by the legislature for questionable spending, including a hidden $1 million deal with the rapper Pitbull, whose suggestive video for the song Sexy Beaches helped cost Visit Florida's former chief executive his job. Among the cities where the staff visited, San Francisco and Singapore." And Steve goes on to write, "A high-paying marketing job at Visit Florida can be a ticket to see the world." So there is an article critical of some of the decisions made by some of the governor's staff in today's newspaper. Well, again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And this news is coming in just now regarding the Keystone XL pipeline in Nebraska. They've taken a vote on whether or not to let the pipeline proceed through the state. And a Nebraska panel earlier today approved the alternative Keystone XL route, removing the last regulatory hurdle to the $8 billion oil pipeline project. We're going to have more about the Keystone XL pipeline at 12 noon today on the NPR News, so stick around for that. Well, there's an ongoing controversy. It seems to be building, and that is of men in prominent places sexually harassing women. And the stories continue to come out. We've heard about Harvey Weinstein and the comic Louis C.K. We also heard about Senator Al Franken last week, George H.W. Bush. For years, we've known about Bill Clinton's history with women. Judge Roy Moore, the U.S. Senate candidate in Alabama. Those accusations seem to continue to mount, with several women now saying that he acted inappropriately toward them. And we're going to listen back to something that was reported on more than a year ago, and that is the allegations that when he was a TV host and not president, President Trump, Donald Trump, sexually harassed women. And I want to play just the tape that brought this to everybody's attention. This is the tape from the Hollywood exchange where Access Hollywood, where Donald Trump was on a bus with media celebrity Billy Bush, and they were talking about women on the bus. And this is in 2005. This tape did not emerge to the public's knowledge, it did not emerge publicly until the campaign, the presidential campaign in 2016. And this this audio and video emerged just a few weeks before the election. I think a lot of people thought it would damage Donald Trump's candidacy. It turned out not to have a huge impact because he eventually won the presidency. But my question is, if we, in this climate that we're in now, if we found this out, what would happen to Donald Trump? And here is the exchange between Donald Trump and Billy Bush, recorded in 2005. We've edited it, too. So if you have young children, please take them away from the radio. There are adult themes in this discussion. We've edited out the four-letter words, but still, take your young kids away from the radio right now. Just this is not a good time for them to be listening, because the discussion here is for adults only. So be sure to have the young kids turn away from the radio. So we're going to listen to Donald Trump in 2005 talking to media celebrity Billy Bush.
And she used to be very, she's still very beautiful.
I moved on her, actually. You know, she was down in Palm Beach. I moved on her, and I failed. I'll admit it.
Whoa.
I did try and f*** her. She was married.
Huge news, Sarah.
No, Nancy.
Yeah.
No, this was marriages. And I moved on her very heavily. In fact, I took her out furniture shopping. She wanted to get some furniture. I said, I'll show you where they have some nice furniture. I took her out furniture. I moved on her like a bitch. I couldn't get there, and she was married. And all of a sudden, I see her. She's now got the big phony tits and everything. She's totally changed her look.
She's your girl's hottest shit in the purple.
Whoa!
Yes!
Whoa!
Yes, the Donald is good!
Whoa!
Oh, my man! Wait, wait, you gotta look at me when you get out of your
life. This up.
You give me the thumbs up.
Okay, you are a piece.
You gotta put the thumbs up. You gotta get the thumbs up.
Can't be too happy. Anybody else off first? Yeah, let me.
It's very fun.
You
got to
give
me
a thumbs up.
You and I will walk
in.
Oh, my God.
Maybe it's a different one.
Better not be the publicist. No, it's her.
Yeah, that's her, with the gold. I got to use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they'll let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. I can do anything.
Look at those legs. All I can see is the legs.
No, it looks good.
Come on, shorty.
Oh, nice legs, huh?
Oof, get out of the way, honey. Nice, good legs. Go ahead.
It's always good if you don't fall out of the bus. Like Ford, Gerald Ford, remember?
Down below. Pull the hell.
Hello, how are you? Hi.
Nice, Trump, how
nice
are you?
Nice seeing you. Terrific.
Nice to meet you.
Terrific. You know Billy Bush?
Hello, how are you?
Nice to see you. How are you doing, Ariane?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Are you ready to be a soap star?
We're ready. Let's go. Make me a soap star.
Donald Trump in 2005 interacting with media celebrity Billy Bush before going down and taping a TV show. That was his attitude towards women. So if that tape emerged during the last few months of the presidential campaign last year, but if that tape were to emerge today, would the public treat President Trump any differently? We know that some high-profile people have been forced to resign their jobs in the wake of allegations of sexual harassment against women. And that is Donald Trump's interaction in private in 2005. Now, let's go to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's a spokesperson for the White House at the White House briefing last Friday. She was asked about some of the latest allegations against Judge Roy Moore in Alabama, and also the allegations against Donald Trump were brought up. And let's listen to the interaction between the White House spokesperson and reporters. This happened last Friday.
James.
Thank you, Sarah. I don't mean by asking about this to suggest it's necessarily the most important thing facing the country right now, but it happens to be my story assignment for the day. You say that the president finds these allegations against Mr. Moore, Judge Moore, to be very troubling, extremely troubling, etc. As we all know, the president faced a number of similar allegations, or somewhat similar allegations, during the course of the campaign, and he vigorously denied them. But I wonder what you would assert to be the difference between the two situations, such that on the face of things, we should find one set of allegations very troubling, and on the other, we shouldn't pay attention to them at all, or we should totally disbelieve them?
Well, I think the president has certainly a lot more insight into what he personally did or didn't do, and he spoke out about that directly during the campaign, and I don't have anything further to add beyond that. Jim?
Roy Moore, with the president campaign with Roy Moore?
Not that I'm aware of.
And can I ask you a follow-up? Do you think he's a creep?
Do I?
Yeah.
Look, I don't know Roy Moore. I haven't met him in person, so I wouldn't be able to respond to that. Kristen.
Does the president think that Roy Moore is qualified to serve in the U.S. Senate?
Look, the president, as I've said about seven or eight times now, thinks that this is a decision for the people of Alabama to make.
Sarah, we've heard from you. We've heard from Ivanka on this. When are we going to hear from the president himself?
The president has put a statement out earlier in the week when we were on the trip, and he stands by that statement.
He's ignored chatted questions for two straight days. He's the president of the United States, the leader of the Republican Party. I think a lot of people want to hear.
I'm aware of all of those qualifications of the president, and it's actually my job to come out here and answer questions on his behalf, which I'm doing, which I've done, and which he has done repeatedly over the last 12 days while we were on a trip across Asia. So to act like he hasn't answered questions is just silly.
Does he think Senator Al Franken should step down?
Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's a spokesperson for the White House at the White House briefing last Friday, answering questions about President Trump and Judge Roy Moore and the comparisons being made to other allegations of sexual impropriety. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Sean sent us this from the newsroom. In Tampa, westbound I-4 is blocked approaching downtown Tampa due to a police investigation. This is a felony case out of Lakeland. Lakeland police followed the vehicle from Lakeland into Tampa. So again, if you're traveling westbound on I-4, this is the problem. As you approach downtown Tampa, it's blocked due to a police investigation. It's a felony case out of Lakeland, and the LPD followed the vehicle from Lakeland into Tampa. So there was essentially some sort of a police chase. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. So we heard the original tape from 2005 involving Donald Trump. Then we heard the White House response to reporters raising the issue once again. Let's go to CNN right now. This is from last year, and the CNN report about what was then eight women who had complained that Donald Trump sexually harassed them. Let's listen to some of the women and their stories involving their interaction with Donald Trump before he was elected president.
The first of eight accusers publicly came forward Wednesday night of this week. Mindy McGilvery was one of them. For her, it was the presidential debate in St. Louis that prompted her to speak out. McGilvery couldn't believe what she had just heard.
We hear Anderson Cooper ask him, like, a number of times, you know, is this something that you did? Did you grope women? Did you kiss them? And he just adamantly says no. I jumped off of my couch. And I was like, you're a liar.
That's my answer.
Summer Zervos once appeared as a contestant on Trump's reality show, The Apprentice. After she was kicked off the show, Zervos was in talks with Trump about working for his company. He asked to meet her at the Beverly Hills Hotel.
He came to me and started kissing me open-mouthed as he was pulling me towards him. I tried to push him away. I pushed his chest to put space between us. And I said, come on, man, get real. He repeated my words back to me. Get real, as he began thrusting his genitals.
I was very young.
In the early 1990s, Kristen Anderson was an aspiring model in New York. According to the Washington Post, Anderson had never met or seen Donald Trump in person until he sat down next to her one night in a Manhattan dance club.
The person on my right, who unbeknownst to me at that time was Donald Trump, put their hand up my skirt.
Temple Taggart is a former Miss Utah. She says without her consent, Trump kissed her on the lips immediately after meeting her in 1997. Rachel Crooks told the New York Times that Trump kissed her inappropriately as well in 2005. Natasha Stoyanov, a writer for People magazine, says Trump forcibly kissed her and pinned her down while on a reporting assignment at Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. And Jessica Leeds says Trump grabbed her breasts and put his hands up her skirt on a plane in the early 1980s. Donald Trump again Friday denied all of the allegations against him and described it all as a political smear campaign.
I don't know who these people are. I look on television. I think it's a disgusting thing.
Which is exactly how Mindy McGillivray says Trump treated her one night backstage after a Ray Charles concert at the Mar-a-Lago estate. McGillivray was there with a friend waiting to get her picture taken with the singer when she says Trump grabbed her from behind.
And he didn't give me a second glance. He knew what he did. I know he knew what he did. I can tell by looking at his smug face, he knew exactly what he did. I told Ken, I was like, Donald just grabbed my ass. And he was like, well, what do you want to do about it? I was like, I was silent, you know? I don't want to do anything.
She says she regrets not confronting the billionaire right on the spot. And despite Trump's insistence that he treats women with respect, all of the women who've come forward say Trump treated them like objects that he could have his way with.
What would you tell Donald Trump today?
You're a sick, sick person. And if you don't acknowledge it, then maybe he's just an helpless old man who needs to step down.
Well, that was a CNN report from last year in October. At the time, eight women had alleged that Donald Trump had been inappropriate with them sexually. Now, according to Newsweek, there are 16 women who are making similar claims that President Trump acted inappropriately in a sexual manner towards the women. President Trump has said that he's going to file a lawsuit against the women. He says the allegations are false, but so far that lawsuit has not been filed. So, what do you think? Our phone number is 813-239-9663. And I'd especially like to hear from people who have kids. If you've got, especially if you're the mom of daughters, or you've got a daughter, or if you're the dad of daughters, what do you think about this? Would President Trump be treated differently today if these allegations were just coming out and this was the middle of the campaign? Would President Trump be treated differently today, or would he be treated the same? Would he still win the presidential election? What do you think? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. Let's go to Fran in Largo. Fran, what do you think about the allegations against President Trump?
Well, Rob, I'm as disgusted as anybody is with all this stuff. Now, I'm going to go off subject a little bit. And just let me say this. I listened to Amy Goodman earlier. I heard her interview with Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, and that is one determined man. And I think if the Democrats are looking for a leader, he is it.
Okay,
I mean,
well,
we need to get rid of this trash in there now.
All right.
And filth.
Fran, thanks a lot. Thank you. Good to hear from you. Let's take some more phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. But especially if you have daughters, I'm interested in what your thoughts are, because I want to hear from some parents. What do you think about this? Let's go to Mike, who's in Wesley Chapel. Mike, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
You know, I just wanted to say it's pretty obvious that with this, you know, the Republicans are just so desperate to have somebody that will rubber stamp whatever legislation they put through, that they've completely ceded the moral high ground. They can no longer, you know, claim to be the conservative party. They're not conservatives.
Well, because they've lost their moral focus?
Well, because if they're willing to sit there and have Trump as their president, and at this point they are, and, you know, it's obvious that they're trying to get this tax bill through no matter what. But once it's through, it'll be interesting to see whether or not they are willing to say, look, here's a guy who assaults women, who brags about it, who's on tape about it, and they're willing to do something about it. I suspect the answer is probably no until the polls make their political calculus, show that it's necessary. They honestly don't care.
All right, Mike, thank you so much. Do you have kids? Do you have daughters?
I do. I have a daughter. She's a freshman in college.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks,
Sorry,
Mike. All right, good to hear from you. All right, so interested especially in hearing from parents, 813-239-9663. Adam writes this, it's extremely hard to find a Trump supporter who will defend this. The same ones who scream about Harvey Weinstein and Al Franken are absolutely silent when it comes to Trump. That's a part of Adam's email. And then Debbie writes this, the Trump tape with nasty, disparaging remarks about women should be played by the media constantly until somebody pays attention. What a disgusting creep, writes Debbie. Let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Shane in Riverview. Shane, you're on. What would you like to say?
Good morning. Good morning. You asked a very good question, I'm to tell you. If this was happening today, if this remark, these allegations about Donald Trump had came out today and not last year, would he have still won the election? And believe it or not, the answer would be yes. He would have won. And I'm going to tell you why. And this is a topic that not a lot of people have talked about. Donald Trump did not win the election based on facts or based on priorities of the American people. Donald Trump ran a campaign. The Republicans, and there are a lot of Americans that took it up. And Donald Trump won this election because of this four-letter word, hate. Hate has blinded a lot of our American eyes. Today, hate is on the rise. It was there. But when Donald Trump came on board, that's the only thing everyone off.
And Shane, who do you think the hate is directed toward?
The hate is directed toward people of color and minority. And I'm not saying this because I'm black. I am not saying it because I'm black. It is hated towards the media. And people are not smart. We just are not smart enough to sit and sift through this and say, what? Because I still ask the question today. Tell me one thing that you heard from Donald Trump that really made you voted for him. And all that people can say, I wanted change. And I understand. I wanted the change too. But how would you feel to say the true damn change is going to come from somebody that can't tell you how they're going to change it?
All right. Shane, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
Thank you, man.
All right. All right. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Tina in Tampa. Tina, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. I want to say that last year when these when the first allegations came out and the tape, especially when Donald Trump was taped, I mean, it was his voice, his words. It wasn't like anybody was reporting it or anybody was coming forward. He was confessing on himself his, you know, his deplorable behavior and groping women. That's illegal behavior. I would have thought last year that would have gotten him pressured out of the race, but it didn't. And, you know, I was blown away by that, you know, with all the other Republicans that were running, qualified people, I wouldn't vote for any of them, but, you know, there were some good candidates there. So I have to tell you, I think that would it disqualify him now? Probably not. I kind of agree with the previous caller that there were other things other reasons why people voted for Trump, and it is anger. That's a very powerful thing, and that not to use a pun, but that kind of trumps other things like rational thinking and you know, compromise and let's work together to solve, you know, problems and the way things may have been in the past in Congress. He just was a demagogue, and that means that, you know, the rules we normally, you know, play by, decency and ethics and not allowing this kind of thing, that just got all tossed out the window.
All right, Tina, thank you. Thank you for chiming in, we're getting your thoughts. Thank you for making that call. Let's go to Mark, who's in Tampa. Mark, what do you think about this?
Yes.
Mark, you're on.
Yeah.
What would you like to say?
I did vote for Trump, but it didn't matter who was running against Hillary. And, you know, when these things took place with him groping, it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, how many rich guys were groping their secretaries or any woman around them?
Do you think that Harvey Weinstein should have been fired?
You know, of course.
And do you think that President Trump acted appropriately?
No.
And why do you think he belongs in office?
Okay. I don't exactly say he does belong in office. But think about how the times were. I mean, we were watching movies like, or TV shows like Benny Hill, Our Man Flint is a secret agent living with four women. I mean, if you know how the 60s were in the 70s, it was just something that always went on.
In 2005.
It's terrible.
Well, Mark, thank you so much. Well, we're out of time. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. Wish we had more time. And stay tuned, because coming up next, the NPR News, and then Sean Canan will be here to talk about the effects of the tax bill on graduate students. That's the topic coming up on the Midpoint program next. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF in Tampa. Frank Knox was our phone producer today. I'm Rob